This meeting of the Senate Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee will come to order. We have four bills on the agenda. Senator Murphy, we'll start with your bill, Senate File 345. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Senate File 345 is this year's version of the medical marijuana bill. And I believe the chair of the committee has carried this bill in the past, and so have other senators like Senator Steve Kelly. Members, first, I have an author's amendment to get the bill into the shape that it needs to be. It's the A1 amendment.
A1 amendment is in the packets, I believe. Right. Actually, mine was on top of the bill, Senate File 345. This is the author's amendment to put the bill in the shape he wants. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members, today we're here to talk about the medical benefits of medicinal marijuana. First, let me say that, some of these diseases that this bill is attempted to help their patients with some of the severe pain, chronic pain issues, and things like low appetite. This bill is definitely going to help those people. I got into this probably late in the game. My dad was sick, and I'm sure that I had cancer, and I'm sure that many other members and people in the audience here have had family members in that situation also. And even though my dad having terminal cancer, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, heart condition, and a liver problem, his pain the last few weeks of his life was controlled by some very strong and powerful drugs that made him less lucid. And I believe that, I don't think my dad would have ever wanted to take and use this option, but if it would have been available, I'm sure that he probably would have looked at that, because he was, like a lot of other people, full of life, even in those last few weeks, and wanted to interact with his family and his friends, and was not able to for large periods of the day because of the heavy prescription drugs that he was on, kept him sedated to the point where consciousness wasn't always, he wasn't always conscious, put it that way. Members, I can go through the list of everybody that supports this bill, from nurses associations, doctors associations, right down the line. I think all those lists of people who support this are in your packet. Everybody from the Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota AIDS Project, the Public Health Association, and the Minnesota Senior Association. And just about 2 days ago, the American Academy of Neurology published a study in their magazine called Neurology, which is the premier medical journal, research journal in the nation for neurologists. It concluded that marijuana is the only treatment available for AIDS patients suffering from debilitating nerve pain. These experts came to that conclusion based on the science around this drug. You're going to be hearing from witnesses that are going to try to refute the strong support of the healthcare professionals on this bill. But just remember, when you listen to the people who are opposing the bill, that these folks don't represent physicians or nurses or their associations. This bill has been modeled after several other programs that have been instituted around the United States. Currently, there are 11 other states that allow medicinal marijuana. One state is having a terrible problem. That's California. I'm sure you're going to hear all about that. Members, California started their bill off as a ballot measure, and it had specific things written into the ballot that made the workability of that law unworkable. The other states that have done it have not seen near, haven't seen the problems that the state of California has underwent. So when you hear about the California model, our model is completely different from that, and the other 10 states that allow this, their models are completely different. The one thing that I can say is that this is going to help patients deal with their pain when it comes to cancer, HIV, AIDS, glaucoma, hepatitis C, and chronic and those conditions that cause chronic pain. I also want to mention one other thing from the state of Colorado. As soon as I get my cell phone turned off, Mr. Chair. There we go. From the state of Colorado, there's a historical overview, and I believe that we provided this for the members, too. It was written by Gail Kelsey, the former program administrator, talks about what they did, how they set it up. It's a four-page paper, but the line that I want to turn your attention to is the very last one. On the very last page, it says, overall, however, the registry has operated smoothly and without negative political or legal consequences. Folks, this is a health issue. I've talked with law enforcement. As a matter of fact, I talked with a very respected member of law enforcement just a few minutes ago and asked them that if they have ideas on how to make this bill very tight, to bring those forward. I don't suspect that we'll ever get to the point where law enforcement is going to support this bill, but at least what we want to do is to make sure that law enforcement knows the tools that they have to enforce the law and are able to work within those laws. Now, Mr. Levine is here to answer any questions on the bill. Mr. Chairman, I believe this bill is pretty much the same way as it was last year. Most of the members here have seen it. We made a couple little changes earlier on just to kind of clean up a few references and things like that. But Mr. Levine is here to talk about any nuances of the bill that the committee would like to know about. And we do have, I think, four or five other testifiers in support of the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson, first, did you want to ask?
Yes.
Do you want to ask before you go? Mm-hmm. You go, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Murphy, excuse my lack of knowledge on this bill. This is my first year on health. Is this in the bill a smokable product only, or can this be a derivative, or can you explain any about that?
Mr.
The bill does not specify that.
Levine, could you identify yourself?
I'm sorry, Neil Levine, Director of Minnesotans for Compassionate Care. The bill doesn't specify that, so what we found is a lot of patients, especially patients who are suffering from cancer, choose not to smoke marijuana. They choose to bake it into food or ingest it in other ways, and there's also technology for vaporizers where they can get the same effect of smoking marijuana, but how a vaporizer works is it heats marijuana right before the point of combustion so they don't get any of the harmful effects from the smoke. So there are ways to ingest marijuana where you do not deal with the harm of smoke.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, do you think your father would have been more likely to use it if there wasn't that smoking stigma attached to it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, possibly, but I think, you know, my dad was of the mindset, and like a lot of folks in his generation, that, you know, this is it's considered to be an illegal drug, and law enforcement enforces those laws. And, you know, I think that, you know, he was probably still would not have. My dad did quit smoking. I mean, as soon as he was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis when he was 38, he quit smoking. And I think that probably had more to do than whether it was legal or not legal, because he was pretty down on smoke.
Senator Coring, and then Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just, just relating to the amendment, we really didn't have a whole lot of explanation. I guess it's just pretty much, it appears that it's just technical. Is that right, Senator Murphy, or is there any big changes from what the bill has been in the past, or can you just explain this just a little bit?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Coring, I have kind of a rundown here of what it did. Lines 2 to 4 clarify that a practitioner can still be sanctioned for failing to evaluate a patient's medical condition. That was a question that had come up. Lines 5, 6, and 9 delete language requiring rules to be adopted within 90 days of enactment. And that 90 days, you know, that just wasn't realistic. So we want to make sure that the rules that are adopted are well thought out and well prepared. Lines in 7 and 8 are they're purely technical. 10 to 12 clarify that registered organizations are prohibited from acquiring, possessing, cultivating, et cetera, marijuana for any purpose other than to assist a registered patient or their primary caregiver. In other words, they're not going to be, you know, handing it out to whoever.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Murphy or Mr. Levine. Just for purposes of helping to understand the context of this, the federal rules on marijuana, can you just review how the federal government looks at the use of marijuana and maybe also the FDA and the medical? What is the medical opinion on marijuana as a drug and its benefits, and just to help us put into context what what this is about?
There is a conflict. If Minnesota chose to pass this law, there would be a conflict with federal law. There are 11 other states that have these laws, and even though there is a federal conflict, the reality is 99% of all arrests for marijuana made at the state and local level, which is why these laws are so effective. So it is pretty much set in law that the state does have the option to pass these laws. If the federal government were to decide that they wanted to come in here and arrest people, they could. But the head of the DEA, Karen Tandy, has said that they're not going to waste their time going around arresting patients. They just don't have the resources or the police force. So what this law does, it does effectively protect patients. Regarding the question of where the FDA and the DEA is at it, what's interesting is the DEA controls the only – that right now there is a set supply of marijuana for research grade, and the DEA controls whether or not researchers can actually grow higher grade marijuana for testing. And there was just a case that was decided on Monday where a DEA administrative judge ruled that the DEA had been unnecessarily not granting a research license to the University of Amherst, Massachusetts, wanted to grow medical-grade marijuana for testing. And unfortunately, there's been a lot of roadblocks put up by the DEA where we have police force making a federal police force essentially making medical decisions. In 1988, another DEA judge ruled that marijuana was misclassified and should be moved to Schedule II, thus allowing patients to write prescriptions. But these judges' opinions, the head of the DEA is not bound by them, so they have never acted on that, and there's a lot of roadblocks for the research going forward. The American Medical Association has no official opinion on medical marijuana. They fought with and opposed making marijuana legal in the first place back in 1937 when the federal government first made that happen. As Senator Murphy stated, there is quite a few local organizations that have supported this. Quite a few state medical societies have supported bills in their states. The American Nurses Association supports medical marijuana, as well as the Minnesota chapter. So there is sort of widespread support. And what is universal with the medical community is that they do not believe that doctors should be sanctioned for discussing all options with patients, and I do not believe that patients should be arrested for simply trying to alleviate their pain. So that's sort of the state of where the medical community is.
And Mr. Senator Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Levine. I guess what I was hoping to get, maybe you can clarify, or if we don't know, maybe we can get an answer. But I'm interested in the opinion of the medical community. Maybe it's the FDA, but of the value of smoking marijuana, and I don't, I know last year, and I was not on this committee, but in the Judiciary Committee, we did have this bill, and we were talking about slightly different subjects in the Judiciary Committee, but I guess what I'd like to have is some clarification on the, the science of, or the medical technology that would support this as a legitimate remedy, and I think for me, one of the concerns is that you have in place federal structures and laws that are intended to try to govern uniform product safety dosages, try to set some kind of standards for treatment that are accepted and have been tested and been confirmed through the science of medicine. And I know that that process doesn't always work perfectly, but that's the intent of it, and I'm wondering what the wisdom of saying, if we are in fact going to do this, that whole enterprise is not legitimate in the case of this particular drug and why we would do that. But just can you give us some idea of what the medical opinion is on the value of smoking marijuana as a remedy? What does that opinion say?
Like I said, there is a small body of research that shows that there is medical benefit. There are countries that have essentially legalized medical marijuana, Canada being one of them. And we have the states that have gone forward with this, but there have been roadblocks set to the official FDA process. So there has been no rescheduling of marijuana. A lot of these tests have not been allowed to go forward. So there isn't. I have no clean answer outside of the opinion. The medical community tends to go from neutral to supportive.
Thank you. With that, maybe we can begin the witnesses. Or did you have any other comments about the bill?
Mr. Chair,
I call them?
I have a question about the bill.
Go ahead, Senator Fishburne.
Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm not sure, Senator Murphy, if you can answer this. I guess I was just glancing. Is 12 plants per patient, is that pretty typical? I mean, I was just kind of looking. This seems like a lot of, like you're able to, the patient's allowed to have quite a bit. If 12 plants, it's and 2.5 ounces and any other, you know, any amount of any other part. And so I'm just kind of wondering, is that based on?
The last state that passed a medical marijuana law, which passed through their legislature, was Rhode Island. And in their law, the limit is 12 plants. So this is not reinventing the wheel. The plant amounts vary from state to state, and 12 is sort of in the middle. And by most of the scientific evidence of this is that really is sort of, it's probably a sufficient supply, but if a patient does not want to smoke marijuana, if they want to ingest it, that could run out pretty fast. It doesn't produce that much, and they're only allowed to have 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana under the bill. So there is precedent for that number, and the amount of marijuana that 12 plants could produce, there is some debate whether or not that actually would be sufficient.
Mr. Chair, just one kind of follow-up. How much usable marijuana would a plant produce?
Not being a horticulturalist, I can only tell you what I've read, but it varies, essentially. And what happens is when people are growing these plants, depending on their depending on how skilled they are as a horticulturalist, it depends on how much marijuana they could yield. But under the bill, it's very strict. They could only have up to 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana. If they exceed those limits, they are not within the bounds of the law, and the law would not protect them.
And Mr. Chair, could someone just show me, like, is that 2.5 ounces? Or how, is it, yeah. Is it a little baggy full, or how much? How much? Well, how big is it?
Senator,
I guess I'm not trying to be funny. It's about that.
About that much.
Okay, thank you.
But once again, it could vary, and it depends on the quality of the plant. Think of it like a tomato plant. I mean, you can grow a tomato plant, but you don't know exactly how many tomatoes you're going to harvest off of it. All plants are basically the same. It depends. You know, it depends on a lot of things. It depends on your skill as a horticulturist of whether or not you're going to grow a plant that is going to be heavily weighted with the proper THC content, or it's going to be lighter and sparse. And, it's like any other plant.
Thank you.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Murphy, on page 1, subsection 2, subdivision 2, It lists 12 marijuana plants, 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana, and any amount of other parts of the marijuana plant. What does that number three, any amount of other parts of the marijuana plant, mean?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Wergen, if you look at it, it says 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana. That's the portion that has a THC value in it. Any amount of the other parts of the plant are like stems and, you know, the junk parts. And once again, like a tomato plant, you're only harvesting the tomato. And it's basically the same thing with these marijuana plants. You're only using the parts that have medicinal value, and the rest of it is basically junk.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Wergen,
if they can have 12 marijuana plants, and it doesn't say they only can be 18 inches tall, mm-hmm. and they can have 2.5 ounces of usable marijuana, mm-hmm. why does number three even have to be there?
Well, number three, Senator Wergen, I believe number three has to be there because, you know, as you're growing the marijuana plants, you know, it's like anything else. Let's just say tomato plants. Okay, you take and grow your tomato plants inside for the first couple weeks, and then after the thaw and everything, you take them outside, you plant them. Well, plant number 12 may start producing tomatoes before plant number one. You know, they may be in different stages. And the same thing with marijuana. Plant number 12 may be producing a usable product, and plant number one is not fully matured yet. So, you know, as this one matures and you're able to use all of the product off of that, then you know, that one's no good anymore. You move that away. Now this one is starting to mature and produce usable products, so then you would use that. And it's just kind of a cyclical.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wergen.
Senator Murphy, what you're saying is completely contradictory to only being able to have 12 plants, because now you just said...
No, yeah. I don't believe it was.
You wrote
it. Mr. Chair, then I missed something. Because...
Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, maybe I can help. It's like a plant of basil. You don't pull up the plant when you're harvesting from it. You know, you pull some of the leaves off, and then they continue to grow. I think that's the deal. Am I right, Senator Murphy? Never having grown marijuana, I'm kind of guessing on this. I've grown basil.
Mr. Chair. Senator Higgins, I was wondering.
Senator Wergen.
Well, Mr. Chair, that still doesn't make sense, because if you pull it off and it grows, that's a 13th plant.
No. Sorry, Mr. Chair. No, you pull the leaves off.
Right.
Okay. Like you do basil.
So you can still... I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
We're not doing well here, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, it says 12 marijuana plants. Mm-hmm. So they can have 12 plants. That in a pot, in a planter, in a box, in a garden, whatever. They can have 12. So I don't understand the need for any amount of other parts of the marijuana plant, because you either have the usable leaves or you have the plant.
Senator Murphy or Mr.
Mr. Chair. The intent here is, it doesn't have to do with the actual 12 plants. The intent here is that once the usable part of the marijuana is harvested from the plant, say that a patient were to encounter law enforcement, and the usable part of the marijuana would only count towards the weight of 2.5 ounces, right, where the stems and the seeds would not. So right, the usable amount would be that 2.5 ounce limit. So if a patient had 3 ounces of marijuana, but when you just subtracted the, as Senator Murphy said, the junk from the actual usable marijuana, it's under 2.5 ounces, they would not be violating the law. That's the intent.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Murphy and Mr. Levine. I want to get back to kind of the medical aspect of this. And typically, and I'm not a physician and I'm not a pharmacist, but my understanding is one of the reasons why the structures we have in place is to do things like to assure that dosages and quality and there's consistency in the product. How is that accomplished in this kind of a provision where, as I understand it, there is no real dosage that's prescribed, there is no real quality standard, there is no testing, there is no... And part of that question is, let's say, for example, I'm a physician and I have a patient. I say, well, I'm going to prescribe or give you whatever the permission slip to do this. And then that person has a negative reaction, an overdose. Is there an action against a physician who
Mr. Chair.
And then I raise the question, how can a physician prescribe something that is illegal? So what is the recourse for people that are taking this treatment and have a bad experience? Do they have any legal or recourse to say, well, I've been harmed by getting bad advice or a bad dose or a bad, I mean, what is the recourse for that?
Mr. Chair, first off, nobody in all of recorded medical history has ever died from a marijuana overdose. It's never ever happened. It is almost impossible to overdose on marijuana with the amounts that you'd have to consume. And the reason that patients find this so effective, smoking it so effective, is because they get to titrate their dose. Because you're going to hear from a few patients, and these are not people who are looking to get intoxicated. These are people who are looking to alleviate their pain. And when they hit the level where they've alleviated their pain, they stop using the marijuana, and we're talking about, you know, very small amounts of marijuana just so people can alleviate their suffering. So, but specific to your question, there's nothing in the bill that would not allow a patient, if they felt that they were wronged by their doctor in some way, to sue. But also, the bill does not use the word prescribe. I just want to make very clear that the bill allows doctors to recommend and not prescribe because of the federal conflict. So this is just a doctor. What we're talking about is allowing a doctor to discuss all options with the patient, and then if they certify they have a condition and they recommend that marijuana might be helpful, the patient is allowed to use marijuana to see if it is helpful, and then they have a card that protects them from the threat of arrest or in prison. The reality is we have hundreds of patients in Minnesota right now who are illegally using marijuana simply to try and alleviate their pain, and what this bill would do, like the other 11 states that have it, is protect them from the threat of arrest in jail.
And, Senator Hamm. And Mr. Chairman, to that point, how many of these people have been arrested and put in jail for the use of marijuana for pain relief?
I don't have those numbers. We had a patient who testified last session who was coming back from chemotherapy who was arrested for having marijuana while he's still wearing his hospital bracelet. So, you know, for the most part, these people aren't going to come forward or you know, make a big deal of the fact that they were arrested for marijuana. It's just some sort of thing where they probably just want to pay their fine or go have it quietly go away, would be my guess. But we have talked to patients where that has happened to them.
I'd like to get to the witnesses if we can now, and I will ask all the witnesses, there are about six or seven of them, we'll ask them all to be as brief as possible. Shall I call them, Senator Murphy, in the order? And this is Mr. Fonio, and then Shannon Pekkanen would be next. Sir, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and then begin.
First of all, I want to thank every one of you for allowing me to come up here and speak my piece. My name is Thomas Fonio. I'm one of the estimated 350,000 Americans living with multiple sclerosis. MS is a painful, debilitating disease that affects the central nervous system.
Sir, could you pull the microphone a little closer to
you? Sure.
Thank you.
My symptoms of my condition range from spasticity, chronic pain, and reduced mobility, difficult in walking for extended periods. It's a truly devastating disease with no cure at this time. I can only hope to manage my symptoms and live with the most productive life my treatments will allow. Now, I don't use medical marijuana to treat my MS, but I'm currently being prescribed Marinol. That's an FDA-approved medication whose active ingredients is a synthetic version of one of the components of marijuana. While it does help, to a degree, it does dull the neuropathic pain that I experience on a daily basis, but it becomes less effective as the day wears on. By nighttime, Marinol is a less effective as a pain medication and does little to combat the muscle spasms. given the tremendous amount of evidence that marijuana is effective in treating the symptoms of MS, I would like very much to have it available to me as an option. Everything that I've read and heard about medical marijuana is preferred is preferable to the synthetic version that I'm currently being prescribed. Marijuana is preferable to the synthetic version, which is it modeled over one of marijuana's chemical compounds that has the aforementioned limitation that medical marijuana apparently does not have. Excuse me. I'd like the opportunity to try medical marijuana upon consultation with my doctor, but fear to do so because of the threat of arrest. I can't see any good reason that the law should stand between a patient like myself and the viable treatment that has been shown to help others with my condition. Doctors and patients need all the options at their disposal and shouldn't have to worry about going to jail on account of their devastating illness. I don't want to be forced into the position of being a criminal simply for trying to treat my illness, and I sincerely hope the committee supports this compassionate legislation. It has the potential to help me and many others lead a much fuller life. And just on the outset, whether medical marijuana continues to be illegal or Minnesota becomes one of the states that allows the compassionate use of this drug, it's not going to stop people that you will hear from using it. The drug is easily acquired, plentiful, and very effective, and it will not stop people from trying to acquire it. But unlike me, these poor people will have to risk arrest just to get the medicine they need. On the other hand, I can get my medication and risk nothing. That seems both hypocritical and unfair. Very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fonio. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Call Shannon Pakkinen. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
My name is Shannon Pakkinen. I'm a resident of Minnesota. I'm also a competitive athlete. I suffer from Tourette syndrome. Anybody on the committee that doesn't know what Tourette syndrome is, it's a neurological disorder characterized by repetitive, involuntary movements and vocal outbursts. People suffering from Tourette's frequently have difficult time in their day-to-day lives, as it is a chronic condition that is often misunderstood by others in society. This has certainly been my experience. In addition, there's no clear understanding of the cause of Tourette's, no medication that treats all of its symptoms, and no cure. Over the years, I have been prescribed numerous medications, and while some have been helpful to varying degrees, all have had serious side effects, including lethargy, dizziness, and an inability to focus. As a competitive athlete, I found the side effects of such medication almost as bad as the symptoms they are intended to treat. There's quite a bit of research demonstrating the effectiveness of marijuana in treating neurological tics associated with Tourette syndrome, including studies published in the Journal of Clinical Psychopharmacology and the American Journal of Psychiatry. There's also a long history of anecdotal evidence for this. In my own experience, I can attest to the calming effects my occasional medical use of marijuana has given me and relieved my tics and outbursts associated with my condition. I don't want to be compelled to break the law in order to take my medication. But the fact is, marijuana has been the most reliable treatment I have encountered over a lifetime of medications. Most importantly, marijuana does not bring with it the adverse side effects that would prevent me from leading the most productive life that I can. Given the availability of truly dangerous prescription medications, many of which can potentially result in death, and all of which have negative side effects, I cannot understand why marijuana is not already available for use by patients with their doctor's recommendations. As far as I can see, any treatment that can help a patient control their symptoms ought to be available to them if their doctors see fit. And threatening patients with arrest and jail for trying to relieve their suffering is needlessly cruel. I encourage all members of this committee to support SF 345. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Pakkinen. Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Pakkinen, I'm not very familiar with Tourette's. I know a little bit about it, but is Tourette's painful? That I don't know.
It can create pain because the neurotic spasm has become so bad that your muscles become sore. They tear. People have been known to, in fact, from their blinking and twitches, go blind, detach the optic nerve. It's a hard thing to deal with on a day-to-day basis. I've met a lot of people worse off than me, some less off than me. Echolalia and palilalia are some of the things that come from it. Repetitive words, cursing, inappropriate behavior in society. Say something that you see there that isn't right, okay? You're apt to just, like a gumball machine, it just rolls out of you. You can't help it, you know? It's embarrassing to deal with it. It's something I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and it's been a hard, long trip for me, and it's been my whole life. It's the only thing that's really given me cure. I take alprazolam, which is a Xanax compound, clonazepine, which, you know, they disenable you. I've been on haloperidol, and psychosis they put you in where you can't even function. You can't urinate. You can't go to the bathroom. You can't do nothing. It's a compassionate thing. It's a natural thing, you know. I'm a bodybuilder, and I believe in health. I do drug tests and competitions. I hold several titles here, and I think it's silly for people to not be given the ability to medicate themselves in a proper fashion without using destructive, procured substances that the pharmaceutical companies put out.
Thank you, Mr. Packard.
And for your question earlier, the reason that you're talking about the 13th plant and that, at the end of its cycle, the plant dies. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Peckin. Daryl Paulson and then Mary O'Connor.
Hello. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. I just wanted to, before I started my testimony, I wanted to show you an article that was in the Sessions Weekly in 1993. It clearly shows you how long I've been working on this issue. And my hat goes off to the previous patients for their support and for their willingness to come out and tell their story and tell you why they feel marijuana's effective. Good afternoon. I'm going to read my statement. If it seems a little choppy, it's because I don't read very well, but we'll try it. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Daryl Paulson, and I would like to testify in support of 345. I know that this committee is talking about healthcare reform issues, and you may wonder if the reforms you are considering today actually work or help people. We'd like to think and tell you that this bill is one of healthcare reform, and it will make a huge difference to patients like myself. I suffer from cerebral palsy with severe muscle spasticity and pain. I suffer with these conditions since birth. I've been diagnosed with this disability about 8 months old. I live with intense muscle spasticity ever since. I have little or no use of my legs, and my left arm is severely restricted. Nearly 20 years ago, I discovered marijuana was extremely helpful in combating my symptoms. It has been reliable and effective medication for me, and I have used it in consultation with my doctor. I have also been prescribed several other medications that do not work, like baclofen, Paxil, and some other drugs. But recently, I had the opportunity to try Marinol, which, although the active ingredient in Marinol is synthetic version of THC, I have found it to be far less effective than marijuana itself in treating my spasticity and stimulating my appetite. It has also had severe side effects, which marijuana does not. It left me frequently groggy, disorientated, and from time to time brought on some nausea with it. It simply was not an acceptable substitute. For this, I bring before you this question before this committee. Is it reasonable for the state of Minnesota to lock patients like myself behind bars for allowing and following the recommendations of a doctor? I face the threat of arrest for privately and responsibly using small amounts of marijuana, even though my doctor knows it helps me. All I want to do is live a productive life with the possible use of marijuana, and that would allow me to do that. I should not be treated like a criminal for using the medicine, and I hope that you support Senate File 345 so I can treat my conditions without living in fear of arrest. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Paulson. Thank you very much. Next, we have Mary O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm from Brooklyn Center, and I am a council member in Brooklyn Center. I believe you should legalize medical marijuana. I believe it's a choice that should be made by the individual. It's their choice, their responsibility, not the government's. I think, in general, health care is a personal choice and responsibility and is better handled that way than by the government. Bureaucracy and paperwork are 30% of the cost of health care, and if you want to reduce the cost of health care, I believe you should let the market forces take over, let doctors and hospitals compete, and prices will go down. So I ask you to please ease government out of health care, and I believe prices will go down.
Thank you, Ms. O'Connor. We have next two witnesses were listed as opponents to Mr. Backstrom.
Mr. Chairman, well, he's coming up. Yes. I'd like to make a comment. I'd like to say Ms. O'Connor's statement was very well spoken, and I'd also like to say that anyone that deals with chronic pain and has been prescribed, especially narcotic painkillers, are building a tolerance that's going to kill them. There's no way out. It's either going to be an addictive road, a horrible road, and then eventually death by addiction. Marijuana, I don't know how it works. I've seen what prescription narcotics do, and I don't know how marijuana works, but if it's another tool that isn't going to kill the patient, I really think we should give it to them.
Mr. Backstrom, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a handout. If someone could help me distribute that, please.
We'll get that picked up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is James Backstrom. I'm the Dakota County Attorney and President-elect of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I'm also a member of the Board of Directors of the National District Attorneys Association. I appear before you today to express my strong opposition to Senate File 345, which would authorize the use of marijuana for medical purposes in our state. My opposition to this proposal is shared by prosecutors and law enforcement officials throughout Minnesota and across our nation. The Minnesota County Attorneys Association's Board of Directors has unanimously voted to oppose any efforts to use marijuana for medical purposes within our state. Prosecutors are not alone in our opposition to this proposal. Legalizing marijuana for medicinal uses is also opposed by the Minnesota Sheriff's Association, the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association, the National District Attorneys Association, and the United States Drug Enforcement Administration. The reasons for the strong opposition to this proposal by these law enforcement agencies are many. Included among those reasons are the facts that marijuana is a dangerous and addictive drug that poses significant health consequences to its users, including those who may be using it for medical purposes. Marijuana has no proven medical value, and it is not supported for medicinal use by many prominent national health organizations. There already exists a legalized form of medical marijuana. It's called Marinol. You've already heard some testimony concerning it. The difference between Marinol and marijuana is significant. Marinol can deliver controlled doses of THC to a patient in the form of a pill, which can be regulated and monitored. There is no way to regulate and monitor the amounts and dosages of THC provided through smoked marijuana. In addition, there are many other approved drugs that exist to treat the diseases that we're talking about. And I meant to say this at the start, Mr. Chairman, and I'll stop and say it right now, is I have great compassion for all of the individuals who suffer from the debilitating diseases that this bill is intended to help. And I want to make that perfectly clear. And I also want to make it clear to this committee that I have great respect for Senator Murphy in this and his work here at this legislature. But continuing on, if I may, with my reasons for my opposition, a significant reason is the fact that marijuana is a use as a medicine is contrary to federal law, which has been upheld by our United States Supreme Court. Marijuana is a dangerous drug that is associated with crimes of violence. It is far more powerful today than it was 30 years ago, and it serves as a gateway to the use of other illegal drugs. We believe that legalizing marijuana for medical purposes will lead to increased use of marijuana by other persons, increased crime, and the perception that marijuana is harmless when it, in fact, is not. Legalizing marijuana for medicinal purposes will also increase dangers associated with impaired driving in our state. All of these concerns are significant, and I would ask this committee, before you take any action on it, to take the time to specifically review the facts and the issues surrounding this matter. I have set forth those in great detail in an outline that I attached, which I handed out to you today, and I would encourage you to review that particular document in detail. It contains references and cites to studies that have been done, organizations as well on the medical aspects of this, which I know is the foremost area of concern for this particular committee, and it also discusses in great detail all of the other concerns. I would like to highlight a few of those, and I will not focus particularly on the medical reasons, although they are strong and many, because there are some testimony from other witnesses that will follow me in opposition to this bill. Who have more expertise in those areas than do I. I will, however, would like to focus a little bit your attention, and this is on page 5 of the outline attached to my testimony, if you wish to follow along, and that is the fact that marijuana's use as a medicine is contrary to federal law. As you well know, the Federal Controlled Substances Act, which was passed in 1970 under the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act, by Congress classifies drugs under 5 categories based upon their level of danger and acceptance for medical use. Schedule 1 is the most restricted category under federal law. These are drugs that the experts have concluded have a high potential for abuse, a lack of any accepted medical use, and an absence of any accepted safety criteria for use in medically supervised treatment. Marijuana is classified as a Schedule 1 drug, the most dangerous drug we have in our society. The manufacture, distribution, or possession of that drug is a federal crime. States have no authority to change the classifications of controlled substances as established by the Controlled Substance Act under the Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution. There have been many reviews of these issues by federal courts over the years. I cited two in my outline. That federal courts have consistently upheld the classification of marijuana as a Schedule 1 controlled substance and the fact that it is a dangerous drug with no accepted medical use. Pay attention, please, to the U.S. Court of Appeals decision in 1994. This decision, by the way, followed an extensive administrative hearing process that was done for the specific purpose of trying to reclassify marijuana as a less serious drug and put it perhaps into the Schedule II category at the time, a position which was rejected by the administrators of the DEA. And because, and that was based on the fact that its medicinal value has never been proven in any sound scientific studies. The Court of Appeals, in ruling on that case, specifically said the opposing physicians who testify in support of medical use of marijuana were basing their testimony on, and I quote, anecdotal evidence, stories heard from patients, and impressions about the drug, end quote. The most recent and the most important case for you to consider and be aware of was that of the United States Supreme Court in Gonzalez versus Angel et al., decided in 2005. This was a decision following the adoption of California ballot measure, which legalized the use of marijuana in that state. In this decision, the Supreme Court affirmed that Congress has the authority to regulate controlled substances and to prohibit entirely the possession and use of substances listed in Schedule I, including marijuana. On page 8 of this document, there is a couple of important points that I wanted to point out to you regarding the Supreme Court decision in 2005. The Supreme Court specifically acknowledged in that decision, and these are some of the brightest minds in our nation, the majority of the Supreme Court that ruled specifically acknowledged that adverse impacts of increasing crime and illegal marijuana use will result from the passage of laws similar to that before you today. The Supreme Court, and again I quote, said that the exemption for cultivation by patients and caregivers can only increase the supply of marijuana in the state market. The likelihood that all such production will promptly terminate when patients' medical needs during their convalescence is remote, whereas the danger that excesses will satisfy some of the admittedly enormous demand for recreational use is obvious. The Supreme Court continued and stated that the national and international narcotics trade has thrived in the face of vigorous criminal enforcement efforts. The fact that that has thrived suggests that no small number of unscrupulous people will make use of state exemptions to serve their commercial ends whenever it is feasible to do so. Our Supreme Court is in essence saying that legalizing marijuana will lead to the perception, not only the perception that marijuana is harmless, but it will result in its increased use for illegal purposes, which will result in more crime, endangering our youth and the safety of citizens throughout our state. I would also point back to you, and I neglected to do this earlier, while I will not, I'd encourage you to read in detail the specific testimony or the specific lists of all of the medical professional organizations that oppose the use of marijuana for medical purposes. It's in section 2 of my outline, starting on page 3. But I'd like to point out just one, and that is the landmark study of the Institute of Medicine. And the reason I'd like to point out this to you is because it's listed in some of the material that I've seen that has been given to this committee indicating that the IOM supports the medical use of marijuana. That is not an appropriate conclusion based upon their landmark study, which was completed in 1999. In that particular study, the IOM in fact discounts the notion that smoked marijuana is or can become a medicine in our nation. It found that the effects of cannabinoids on the symptoms studied are generally modest, and in most cases there are more effective medications than smoked marijuana. The study also said that at best there is only anecdotal information on the medical benefits of smoked marijuana for some ailments, and for other ailments such as epilepsy and glaucoma, the study found no evidence of medical value at all. The IOM study also found that using smoked marijuana in clinical trials should not be designed to develop it as a licensed drug, but it should be a stepping stone to the development of new and safer delivery systems for cannabinoids, such as Marinol. Ultimately, the IOM concluded in this study that marijuana is a crude delivery system for THC, and it also delivers many other harmful substances, and that there is little future in smoked marijuana as a medically approved medication. I'll also point out to you that the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Public Health Service has rejected smoking crude marijuana as a medicine, and in fact, the FDA has never approved any medications delivered through smoking. That is harmful, as you all well know. And as this legislature, I guess, is also considering at the same time banning the smoking in private places throughout our state, obviously for legitimate reasons, a policy which I support, by the way. It seems a little bit incongruous to me that at the same time you would be considering passing a law which would encourage people to smoke a substance that is, you know, 3 to 10 times more powerful than smoke and more dangerous in terms of its outcome on its users. In summary, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would agree with the Office of National Drug Control Policy when it stated that even if smoking marijuana makes people feel better, that is not enough to call it a medicine. If that were the case, tobacco cigarettes could be called medicine because they are often said to make people feel better. For that matter, heroin certainly makes people feel better, but no one would suggest that using heroin to treat a sick person is appropriate. Marijuana use, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, even by those using it for medicinal purposes, is harmful. Smoking pot delivers 3 to 5 times the amount of tars and carbon monoxide to the body than does smoking cigarettes. It damages the pulmonary immune system. It impairs oxygen diffusion. I agree with the Office of National Drug Control Policy when it states that it is hard to understand how these changes such as these could be good for someone dying of cancer or AIDS. The bottom line, Mr. Chair and committee members, at this time there is no proven medicinal value in using marijuana to treat illnesses or disease, and in fact, a legal form of THC which can be controlled for its strength and which delivers none of the harmful side effects to smoking marijuana already exists. For all of those reasons, and again, I would encourage the committee to thoroughly review the document I prepared. The prosecutors of our state and our law enforcement partners oppose this bill strongly. I also have included for the committee's consideration, while we object to this bill completely in its entirety, if it is to become law, there are many specific concerns that we have with the language in Senate File 345. I have outlined a preliminary review of those concerns in Section 9 of this bill, which starts on page 10. 9 of my outline, excuse me, which starts on page 10 of the handout that I gave you. Several portions of this bill we believe are not only inappropriate, they're unconstitutional. Sections of the bill that restrict and attempt to control the ability of law enforcement officers in our state to enforce the law, we believe violates the separation of powers clauses in Minnesota's Constitution as well as the United States Constitution. The bill, in essence, threatens any law enforcement officer or agent or prosecutor with penalties, including loss of office, if we were to cooperate with a federal investigation. I took an oath of office, Mr. Chair, when I became the Dakota County Attorney to enforce the law. That oath covers not only Minnesota's laws, but the laws of this great country of ours. I believe that a particular provision is unconstitutional. Other specific concerns that we have are outlined in the bill. I can go through those if the committee wishes, but I would encourage you to read them and take a close look at them as you continue to further study this. I want to make it perfectly clear, though. None of those suggestions or raising those concerns should in any way be interpreted that we will support this bill. We oppose it in its entirety. I also encourage you to consider under Section 11 of my proposal, excuse me, except 11, Section 10 of my proposal on page 14, if you do not reject this bill in its entirety, it is my belief, and it's a belief that's shared by Boyd Beckhue, the Kandiyohi County Attorney, who is the current president of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, that if this bill is not rejected, it should be sent to a study commission, an independent study commission, for thorough review and analysis before the adoption of a controversial proposal such as this is considered. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Backstrom. I'm just curious about one thing. You were talking about the risk of smoking, and as one who's never smoked a cigarette, let alone marijuana, I realize that it's not an effective way to determine dosage and everything like that, but I think of the people who testified before you, Mr. Paulson or Mr. Packinen, and who have used it and feel they can control it, and they say it works and the other things don't work, and that's anecdotal, but, you know, I don't think either of them are lying. And I look at Mr. Packinen, who says he's a bodybuilder and think he could probably throw most of us further than we could throw him. I think he cares a lot about his health. I think he cares very deeply about it, and I can't picture him smoking something for other purpose. What do you say to somebody like that? How do you – I understand your concerns about dosage and the fact that there are toxins in smoke and so on. I understand all those concerns, but this is clearly an individual who's in – has some great difficulties with health problem and is cares very deeply about being in good shape.
Mr. Chair, as I said, I also have great compassion for individuals who are suffering from debilitating diseases, and I certainly hope they can find treatments that will assist them. I just have grave concerns, and I think the literature and the studies that have been done make it extremely clear that the strong weight of evidence is that there is no medicinal value to marijuana that's been proven. It's a dangerous and toxic substance that delivers far too many other chemicals. And as I indicated, even if it does make you feel good while you're using it, that is not enough to overcome all of the other criteria. I think it's important to keep in mind that the Minnesota legislature is considering a bill where you would be substituting your judgment for that of Congress and the administrators of the DEA and the FDA as to the facts that marijuana has no general accepted use for medical purposes and as to defining what's the appropriate way to deliver safe medications to our citizens. I would strongly encourage you not to do that. We have federal agencies. That's their job, and they do it with great passion in terms of ensuring that appropriate and effective medications that are safe are available to those individuals that suffer from the diseases that you just mentioned. I just don't think it's sound public policy, Mr. Chair and committee members, to enact state laws that encourage citizens in our state to violate and commit federal crimes.
Mr. Backstrom, one more point, but before that I was going to say these 2,700 doctors and nurses who signed this thing saying they support it, I frankly would trust them more than DEA administrators in terms of medical judgment. But the other question I have, the County Attorneys Association, you're saying, is opposed to this, and I understand the concerns how this could expand drug use, marijuana use, and so on. The states that have passed these laws, if the county attorneys, are they fighting them? Are they trying to overturn them? But I haven't. It seems to me the states that have passed them are satisfied with them, and not only is there strong public support, but legislators of both parties, some of whom presumably opposed it when it took effect, would be trying to repeal it. Governors or somebody would be trying to repeal it. Is that happening? Are county attorneys fighting it in other states?
Well, Mr. Chair, I can tell you that, and again, this is anecdotal, and I hesitate to present anecdotal information to you, but I mean others have as well, so I'll just share what I have heard from my colleagues across this country, and that is that in the states that have enacted this, they have had significant problems with increased use of marijuana by youth and others illegally, that there is virtually no way to control the distribution of this substance as it's defined under Senate File 345 appropriately. They have grave concerns. I do not know the answer to your specific question as to whether they have efforts in place to repeal these laws. I certainly hope that they do. And I'm going to continue to research that particular aspect of this matter and try to get this committee and your companion committee in the House some more specific information regarding those issues.
And I would appreciate if you do hear, I mean, I don't know what county attorneys are called in California and Idaho and other places, but if you have any of them that are on record as now that they've had it in effect, that they're trying to fight against it, repeal it. I'd be curious to see that. I'd be interested.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will try to gather that. I simply didn't have time. I didn't really realize this was coming up until late last week, so I've been scrambling just to put together what I did.
Well, thank you. And there were, I see four hands up. Senator Torres Ray, Senator Higgins, Senator Johnson, and Senator Worth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a similar question to your question with respect to the statistics in other states and other countries, because I did do some reading before I came here to try to understand what is happening in other states, and I didn't find that information. And I also want to say that it is clear to me that you personally feel very strongly about this issue, using statements such as you will encourage people to smoke marijuana. I don't think that that's the intent in here. I just want to make clear, you know, that that's not what we're doing here, and you stated that a couple of times in your testimony. This is for qualifying patients. This is not trying to encourage people to use marijuana. So I just want to make that clear, that you make that statement
Mr.
a couple
Chair,
of times in your testimony.
And Senator Torres-Rey, I respect that, and I certainly know that that's not your intent or the intent of this committee, but I think I was quoting directly from the United States Supreme Court when it said that laws of this nature will do exactly that, will increase the use. And that's our nation's highest court saying that. It's not just me, and you know, but I agree with their conclusions. And in these states that where this has happened, anecdotally, that's exactly what's occurred according to my colleagues who I've spoken with.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I do want to have that information because it is my understanding that that's not happening. So I want to make sure that we have that information before us and we're just not making anecdotal statements. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sarah Murphy, then Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chairman, if Sarah would pass some of the stuff out here. What I'm having passed out here is a study that was done by the University of Albany of New York, and it contradicts some of the testimony that Mr. Backstrom, and by the way, I've known Mr. Backstrom for 15, 18 years, something like that, a long time. And his heart is truly with his work. And so if doesn't matter which side of the fence you're on here, we can all get along. Committee members, basically what this says is the debate over medical marijuana laws include extensive discussion of whether such laws send the wrong message to young people. In California, which has the longest term, most detailed data available, the number of ninth graders reporting marijuana use in the last 30 days declined by 47% from 1996. In the state of Washington, which passed its law in 1998, sixth graders current and lifetime marijuana use has dropped by at least 50% since the inception of the 98 law. In Nevada and Hawaii, both passed laws in the year 2000, youth marijuana has decreased among all surveyed grade levels by as much as 44% in Hawaii and 41% in Nevada. You know, and I respect Mr. Backstrom's point of view. But I don't respect the views of the United States Supreme Court. They are there to interpret law. This is medicine and people's lives that we're talking about. I think if we pass this law, we'll send the clear message, like these other states have to their youth, saying that this is a prescribed drug. It's something that's controlled. We don't need to have illegal use. This is for people who are sick, who are most likely dying of a terminal disease. We can talk about the long-term effects of smoking, whether it's cigarettes or marijuana, but unless you're going to live 20, 30, or 40 years, there is no long-term effect. And for people like my father and, you know, other family members of people around here who had painful long-term illnesses, well, the long-term effects just weren't there because their prognosis was terminal. I think Senator Wergen has a, or had, I should say, a constituent that testified last year that had ovarian cancer. Her prognosis was terminal. That means you die, and probably soon.
And she did.
She probably wishes that she could have had lung cancer or kidney cancer or something else that smoking would cause, but she had ovarian cancer and died in rapid fashion. This could have alleviated, and I know that that's all anecdotal information, but when you have so many people that come to the testifying table or so many people that have called you and said that I can get relief from my illnesses or from my pain from smoking marijuana, I don't know if that's anecdotal or not, because that person sitting there telling me, and we've heard it right here with the gentleman that has Tourette's, a man that's a picture of health outside of that disease. So those things may be anecdotal, but, you know, when you can reach out and you can touch this young man back here, I don't think that's anecdotal.
Senator Higgins, then Johnson, then Wergen, and I'd like to finish the testimony because we have three other bills as well.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I expect mine will be short. Mr. Backstrom, are you aware of any county attorneys in Minnesota who are actively investigating people in hospice who are using marijuana?
I'm not, Madam Chair. Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator, I'm not aware of that. I don't know if it is or is not occurring, but I'm not aware of it.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Backstrom, if one of your colleagues found out that this was going on in a hospice or nursing home or somewhere in their district, and they were confronted every day with illegal meth use, which one do you think would get the priority call?
Mr. Chair, Senator Higgins, you know, both obviously are illegal drugs. And you're asking me what I think is the most dangerous drug between marijuana and methamphetamine. Certainly meth has extreme danger to our state. But I will tell you this, is that I have not prosecuted many meth users or dealers in my community, and I prosecute hundreds every year, over 300 last year that were methamphetamine users. Very few did not start out smoking marijuana. That's the gateway drug that led them to the more dangerous substances. So I consider marijuana to be a very dangerous and addictive drug that is a gateway to the use of other, even more dangerous chemicals. So, you know, that's why I believe it's not appropriate to legalize this in any form.
But, Mr. Chair, Mr. Backstrom, just to remember, this is for folks who are terminal. This isn't for teenagers who are out there, you know, thinking about starting to use some sort of recreational drug, if that's what they're thinking about. This is for a controlled circumstance and for people who, you know, who really aren't kind of thinking about what their health is going to be in a couple of years.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would encourage you to, you know, take a close look at the language in your bill, because it provides virtually no way for anyone, not just law enforcement officials, but no way for anyone to regulate and ensure that, in fact, only the person prescribed the medication is going to use it and not share it with anyone else, or that others who are growing this may grow more than they need for medical purposes and sell it illegally. There is no way to investigate that under your proposal. There's no way to even control that. It's a little different thing if you're talking about prescribing this medication under a doctor's order in a hospital while a person is in there. That's one thing. But when you're saying they can take it home and use it at home where they have kids in their home and other kids that are coming into their home where there's going to be drugs that are available and others can pick up, I can tell you one of the biggest problems we have today in Dakota County and across our communities with youth is the stealing of prescription medications that are lawfully prescribed to patients, and they steal them when they're in homes of their friends. And I had a young boy who died last year in Dakota County by stealing OxyContin and overdosing on it. Then he stole it from a prescribed prescription use that was given to the father of one of his friends. So these things can happen. They do happen, and I'm very concerned that if marijuana is made legal for medical use, for uses in the home, that's exactly what will happen.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Backstrom, kind of a comment. If marijuana were declassified, let me phrase it differently. I think there's a reluctance to declassify marijuana, just because a lot of the federal system is based on those agencies that help investigate and prosecute and that type of thing against that drug. So we don't want, we've already got a built-in reluctance to declassify marijuana, but I do want to reiterate that prescription drug use, especially narcotics used for pain management, is extremely dangerous, probably far more dangerous than medical marijuana.
Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's hard to know where to start, but I have several questions, if you don't mind. The first one, this Senator Murphy, you handed out a sheet with statistics about increased or decreased use in marijuana in the states that have this law. There's no source listed. Can you tell me where the data is from, please?
I'm sorry, that wasn't put on there. It's the University of Albany of New York.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, you talked about the 2,700 doctors and nurses that are listed on this one sheet that we have. When it was really hard for me when Senator Kelly had this bill and a constituent of mine was testifying, and yes, indeed, she did pass away not too terribly long after that. And this issue has kind of churned ever since then. But I have just a ton of concerns about it. And one of them is just this. There are 2,700 doctors on here, and yet when I went home and asked the physicians in my home area, they entirely disagreed with these doctors and nurses. I talked to a nurse with MS, and she totally disagrees. And then we talk about so many different things. We hear conflicting testimony. I recall hearing the testimony on mercury and vaccines, and we had one PhD followed by another PhD with totally opposite opinions, and yet we think about removing thimerosal because it's potentially dangerous. And yet we want to legalize this, and it is definitely potentially dangerous. But I also believe that in test studies, the marijuana substance, the cannabis plant, should continue to be studied. There should continue to be tests to find out if indeed there are significant medical scientific tests that can prove this is helpful. And if it is, then I do believe that it should be made available in a prescription form of some kind through your doctor and your pharmacist so that it can be used by these folks that are suffering with the pain or whatever those things are. I do not see in the bill, though, by the way, that this is for terminal patients only. I don't think it says that anywhere. But beyond that, the bottom line comes for me in that what we will be telling people is that it's illegal. I'm sorry, that it's, boy, it's confusing to even say that it is legal to use a substance that's still illegal by the federal government. We'll be encouraging Minnesota citizens to break federal law. That just simply doesn't seem right. I really, truly believe that in some way the FDA, the federal government, the science community ought to be dealing with this, and if indeed it does have benefits, it should be introduced as a legal drug through the formal process of prescriptions by a physician and through a pharmacy. But to just encourage people to grow a plant in their home that's illegal and remains illegal just seems contrary to everything we should be doing.
Thank you. Further, Senator Hand, you had a question, well, then we got two more witnesses.
And Mr. Chairman, I won't ask my questions after the witnesses, but I did want to just maybe ask if you might ask the audience or the people listening. There are occasionally some outbursts, comments, contradictions being made in the testimony of an audible nature, and I just think out of courtesy I found it a little distracting, and maybe we could just ask the audience to not
okay, please, the audience, please don't react to the witnesses, please. Thank you very much, Mr. Baxham.
Thank you.
Mr. Pritchard.
Thanks, Jim.
Yep.
Thanks,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some handouts if they want to.
We'll get some.
One is a list of alternatives to smoking marijuana as medicine. Another one is some comments on the bill from the Drug-Free Schools Coalition, a national organization. And also I have some pictures of what would constitute 50 pounds of marijuana, and this is, as my testimony will show, is what one individual could grow for one person. So I'll leave those here as well.
Pounds? 2.5 ounces, isn't it?
We'll get them picked up in a minute. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair? Yes. Mr. Pritchard, would you show us a reference to 50 pounds of marijuana?
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay, go ahead. Begin your testimony.
Yeah, if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer any questions. My name is Tom Pritchard. I'm president of the Minnesota Family Council, and I'm here to speak in opposition to Senate File 345. Let me begin by saying we have the same goal as I believe Senator Murphy has for this legislation, to reduce the pain and suffering people experience from debilitating diseases and conditions. But the driving force behind this bill is a national organization called the Marijuana Policy Project, which has interests that go far beyond just legalizing medical marijuana for suffering people. You can visit their webpage at mpp.org. There you'll find that Minnesota is a targeted state, and their ultimate goal is the legalization of marijuana across the board. In fact, today on their webpage, they had an article which said, quote, MPP's medical marijuana bill in Minnesota gaining momentum. We are not opposed to the FDA-approved marijuana use as medicine to help alleviate pain. Currently, as was mentioned, the drug Marinol, which contains the active ingredient HTC in marijuana, is used to treat nausea, vomiting, and chronic pain. What Marinol lacks is the effect of creating a high. There are also other marijuana-based drugs that the FDA has approved. Chesimet is another one. And there's also another drug that they're currently reviewing. It's called Sativex, which is a spray medicine for neuropathy pain. What we oppose are efforts to circumvent the protections provided by the FDA to ensure that medicines people use are safe and will accomplish what they are intended to do. This legislation to legalize the smoking of marijuana for medical purposes seeks to circumvent this process. We believe drug legalization for medical purposes must be based on science, not merely on what a group or individual desires. To put this issue in perspective, if you wanted a medication for your child to alleviate pain and suffering, would you use a drug approved by the Minnesota legislature or the FDA? I think for your kids, you'd want the FDA approved. I know I would. While the advocates of this bill are asking that you as legislators circumvent the FDA process, an entity which has existed for over 100 years and has served well, to approve a dangerous drug for medical purposes. It was already mentioned that marijuana is a Schedule I, which is the most dangerous drug. But there's also strong research that marijuana, when smoked, is harmful and not safe. It's been found that marijuana potency has more than doubled within the past 10 years. It is now 20 times more potent than marijuana smoked in the 1960s. Marijuana cigarettes deliver 4 times the amount of tar as regular cigarettes. It weakens the immune system. It is addictive. Marijuana is implicated in mental health illnesses. It elevates the risk of depression, psychosis, and even schizophrenia. It affects memory, concentration, and coordination. Some of these effects show up 2 years after stopping use. Marijuana is more dangerous than alcohol. A person is at least 15 times more likely to be admitted to an emergency room for marijuana than for alcohol. Marijuana is addictive. One study of 182,000 children found that 48% were admitted for abuse and addiction to marijuana, compared to less than 20% for alcohol. I admit that some people experience relief from nausea and pain when smoking marijuana, but that's not the end of the discussion. It's only the starting point. For a drug to become a medicine, it must also answer the following questions. Is it effective for particular conditions? What are the risks involved? What are the benefits? If you take out your look at your drug dispenser or bottle for prescription drugs, you'll find information on potency, dosage, frequency, reactions to other medications, refills, warnings about dangerous combining it with other substances. You receive instructions, and you even have a childproof container. All of that is thrown out the window if you go ahead and legalize marijuana, smoking of marijuana for medical uses. Without answering these questions, as I just mentioned, you're putting the people of Minnesota at risk, not only the users but also non-users. Frankly, advocates of smoking marijuana for medical purposes can't answer these questions because they don't know. what research out there says that marijuana is bad for people. It's not healthy. And this is verified. It was mentioned there are 27,000 doctors that support this. Well, look, I think it's very compelling that the lack of support for medical smoking of marijuana for medical purposes and the dangers of smoking it are reasons the American Medical Association, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, the American Glaucoma Society, the American Academy of Ophthalmology, and the American Cancer Society have all rejected the use of smoking marijuana for medical purposes. Now let's look at the bill. What makes, make no mistake, this bill would open the floodgates to smoking marijuana in Minnesota. In many respects, this bill, in its impact, is a marijuana legalization bill, not just a marijuana, medical marijuana bill. In section regarding the definition for a medical condition, turn to section 2, subdivision 4. The definition is a blank check for doctors to recommend the use of marijuana for patients. All one needs to find is a, quote, chronic medical condition that produces chronic pain. That's not a terminal condition. What's that? That could be a tennis elbow or a sore knee. What about back spasms where there's no objective diagnosis, but the doctor can recommend the medication? We just have to be aware of where this can go. And with that definition, it's a blank check. In Section 2, Subdivision 2, look at the amounts that can be produced. The amount of marijuana available to growers and patients is virtually unlimited. At any one time, a patient can have 2.5 ounces on their possession. That's the equivalent of about 70 cigarettes. Of course, when they use those up, they can buy as many as they want, an unlimited supply. The bill allows suppliers of marijuana to produce huge amounts of marijuana, commercial amounts of marijuana. They can grow up to 12 plants per patient. The typical plant produces 1 to 5 pounds of smokable marijuana. 12 plants can therefore produce 12 to 60 pounds of marijuana per year. So for 5 patients, which an individual supplier can provide for, they can grow 60 plants. That would produce 60 to 300 pounds of marijuana. And I handed out a picture of showing just what 50 pounds of marijuana would look like. How many joints can be produced by 60 to 300 pounds of marijuana? It's estimated that that could produce between 27,000 to 136,000 joints of marijuana just for that one producer. For one patient, those plants could produce between 5,500 and 27,000 joints a year. At the upper limit of 27,000 joints a year, that's the equivalent of smoking a joint of marijuana every 20 minutes around the clock, 365 days a year. Again, where do the medical considerations come into play? The dosages. This bill isn't designed to promote the safe use of a medicine, but I believe to flood the state with marijuana production that I believe will be used to push for the eventual legalization of marijuana in the future. There's no regulation on the quality of these plants. That's part of the FDA's job, is to ensure the quality of our medicines, but there's nothing that's going to guarantee that. Where can it be grown? It can be grown in your backyards where neighbors or neighborhood kids could have access to it. What message does that send to our young people? What kind of medicine has no quality control? Also, according to Section 2, Subdivision 8, even 18-year-old boys can grow hundreds of pounds of marijuana. Let's say a minor is a medical marijuana user. What's to prevent the minor from taking marijuana to school? I can't see anything in the bill which would prevent that. What will Minnesota look like? We have no farther to look than California, which has a very liberal medical marijuana law. In California, medical marijuana advocates estimate that there are 200,000 people using medical marijuana. Translate that into Minnesota's population, that would be 27,000 people who would be authorized to use medical marijuana. What's happening in California? Excuse me. Here are some examples. One psychiatrist recommended marijuana to 7,000 patients. Somebody just told me this morning in Oregon, there are 10,000 recommendations for marijuana use. 6,000 of those were made by 6 doctors. Children with ADD have been given marijuana. Parents of some children were recommended to grow marijuana in the home and bake it in brownies. It's been given to adults with depression. Oakland is now called America's Amsterdam. street cafes sell marijuana for medicinal purposes. In some counties, marijuana is being used, grown in residential backyards that are enclosed with barbed wire, 24-hour guards, and bright lights. One state official said, quote, "I don't think the voters there thought they were going to be marijuana farmers. Residents are complaining of the odors." Several California counties are suing the state of California because they object to having to allow medical marijuana implemented in their counties. Under Section 11, Subdivision 6, the bill of this bill authorizes the establishment of registered organizations which dispense marijuana to set up offices in communities. This will further legitimize the use of marijuana to the broader public when you set up storefront offices in downtowns and small communities. Law enforcement is going to be a nightmare. That was already alluded to. You've got three people in a home. One uses marijuana for medical purposes. This bill makes drug paraphernalia into medical devices for the delivery of medical drugs. The FDA strictly regulates medical devices. It raises conflicts there. There are a number of other problems there. Also, I think this exposes the public to greater risk. Consider California with the number of people, increased number of people using marijuana. Marijuana reduces alertness, ability to concentrate, coordination, reaction time. You're going to have more people are going to put other people at risk because of those attributes. 40% of adult males already are arrested nationwide, tested positive for marijuana. 33% of those arrested for reckless driving tested positive for marijuana. It's a gateway drug, which is already alluded to. These are problems in California, and I think they're going to be problems in Minnesota if we go down this road. There are also, as I mentioned, there are no restrictions on the possession of marijuana in a school bus, on school grounds, or in the workplace. What about a 16-year-old boy who takes his marijuana to school if he's a qualified patient? What about a teacher? Should he or she be able to possess marijuana on school premises? Of course, this is just one scenario. You can multiply them. This bill will also infringe on the rights of landlords and employers. Section 2, Subdivision 3 says landlords and employers can't refuse to enroll, employ, lease to, or otherwise penalize a person solely for the person's status as a registered qualifying patient or primary supplier. Sounds to me like it's tying the hands of employers and landlords who might not want to have marijuana on their premises. If they say you can't have marijuana on their premises, they'll come back and says, "Are you denying me my right to possess and use my medicine?" In conclusion, this is also a consumer protection issue. If you as a legislature are now in the business of deciding what's an appropriate medicine and what isn't, what's to stop a big pharmaceutical company from coming to Minnesota and asking you to legalize their drug? Is that how you want to approve medicine in Minnesota? I think not. There are a lot of people who smoke pot who say it makes them feel better, but that doesn't mean they're getting better. The best way to protect patients is good medicine. In conclusion, we all want to be compassionate to those suffering. In this case, the compassionate thing is not to approve the use of smoked marijuana for medical purposes. It's not compassionate to kids, society, or for those suffering and in pain. Let's be sure we rely on science to ensure healthy and useful and helpful medication, not the state legislature. You wouldn't rely on the legislature to say what is an appropriate medication for your children or your grandchildren. Neither should we review it for the entire state of Minnesota. We must move beyond emotional arguments and do what is right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Senator Corrigan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to understand who Mr. Pritchard is speaking for, are you speaking for yourself or this
Minnesota Family Council?
And then, and so, Mr. Chairman, does that have a membership? How many people are you speaking on behalf of?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Family Council, which is a state-based organization, and we have tens of thousands of supporters and people okay. that we represent and so, around the state.
And so, Mr. Chairman, so this is the consensus of the membership, then, of the whole Family Council membership, or is this just your conclusion?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, we didn't take a poll of our members on this, and obviously we deal with a wide range of issues, and there might be people disagree, but I would suspect that most people would not, if they look at the evidence and the situation, I believe the vast majority of our people would be in supportive of our position.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would just say that certainly was a lot of hypotheticals in Mr. Pritchard's testimony, and, you know, a lot of hypotheticals. A hypothetical is, well, I could leave here to go home and I could get in a car accident. That doesn't mean I don't go home. But so, you know, my mom died of cancer right after I got elected to office, and I would give anything to have her back. But so you're saying that, you know, this is another hypothetical. So you're saying that if my mom, which she was in a tremendous amount of pain, then you're saying that you or your organization would deny her the means to ease her pain in her dying days. Then that's what your organization would do, and you, Mr. Pritchard?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, absolutely not. I'm saying she should get the best medicine available, and medical marijuana is not the best medicine. And you go to a doctor, and they have the research and the resources available to provide them. And I sent a list around of showing all the medical alternatives for to medical marijuana in terms of pain and stuff.
And Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Pritchard a doctor? You were just saying that medical marijuana would not be the best.
Senator Coring, we don't need to. The witness is not a doctor, and
okay.
I
was going to vote no on this, but after I heard the testimony from Mr. Pritchard, I'll be voting yes. So thank you for your testimony,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy,
Mr. Chairman, I do need to respond to something that Mr. Pritchard did say that was absolutely incorrect. As a recovering alcoholic, I can tell you that 20,000 United States citizens died last year from abuse of alcohol, and zero died from the abuse of marijuana.
Senator Johnson, that I want to have, we have one last witness who is, I hope we'll keep it to 2 minutes or less, because he has a handout he wants as well. Senator Johnson.
I have to respond to what Senator Murphy just said. I heard someone talk about doing a study on marijuana to see exactly what the effects are so we can make a real studied decision. If we're going to do that, we're going to put alcohol side by side with it. And we're going to look at both of those substances, one legal and one we're considering, and we're going to look at death rates, health issues. We're going to look at all of it if we're going to do a study.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Mr. Steinberg, you have a handout, and maybe if you can, 2 minutes or less, it would help.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senators, I have been following this issue. My name is Oliver Steinberg. I'm from St. Paul. I'm not a patient. I've had a lot of friends in that situation for whom I have sometimes obtained marijuana. And I have been following it. These are all the bills that have been filibustered and defeated against over the last 18 years. I'm glad that. And by the way, marijuana is not a cure. Nobody claims that it is, but it is a palliative and has been used successfully for thousands of years. The Supreme Court did rule, and the Supreme Court justice who wrote that opinion said in a speech later that was reported in the New York Times that had he lived in California, he himself would have voted in favor of the medical marijuana initiative. I am grateful, though, to Mr. Backstrom, because he mentioned the Minnesota Constitution. And in the few minutes or minute I have left, I want to remind you that the Minnesota Constitution has a clause, Article 1, Section 8, that says every person is entitled to a certain remedy in the laws for all injuries or wrongs he may receive to his person, property, or character, and to obtain justice freely and without purchase, completely and without denial, promptly and without delay, conformable to the laws. Now, is there a legislative issue here? Yes. What is it? In 1989, Gordon Hansen of Roosevelt, Minnesota, was arrested and subsequently convicted for growing marijuana, which he used himself to treat his epilepsy. When Gordon went to court, he had two doctors and an expert witness prepared to testify that there was a medical need in his case to use marijuana to deal with symptoms that other prescription medications could not control. The court ruled, and the appeals court upheld it, and that's part of the handout you're getting from me. that Mr. Hansen could not present a defense involving his medical use of marijuana because the legislature, by implication, they said, when the THC Therapeutic Act was passed in 1980, by implication, said the court, the legislature had considered and rejected any other possible use, medical use of marijuana other than the treatment of cancer. Now, Mark Kurzman was around in those days, and he says, no, they only talked about cancer. Nick Coleman was dying. People said, well, let's get a law passed so that at least dying cancer patients can get marijuana. They didn't, by implication or intention, reject other uses. Now, what I'm trying to say is this, that this bill may not be, in the form it's in, the answer to the dilemma of how somebody in Gordon Hansen's position or Daryl Paulson's position or any of the other people who, in fact, have been arrested in Minnesota, how can they get justice freely, completely, and without denial if they can't go into court as an accused offender and say, this was my motivation, this is my defense. Yes, I may have violated the law, but I had to, and the harm that would have come if I had not is greater, and I didn't create the condition that caused me to violate the law. So we need to remedy, you, ladies and gentlemen, need somehow to remedy this gap in the law because of the Hansen case 18 years ago. And I remind you, on the walls of this building, all those great quotations up there in gold letters is one by Daniel Webster, no government is respectable which is not just. And at the minimum, I think everybody can agree, out of compassion, the law of our state must take into account the situation, the dilemma of these people and of their doctors. And if we're in conflict with the federal law in some way or degree, that's what the United States is supposed to be about, a system of laboratories. Let's be a laboratory for justice, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Steinberg. And as you're leaving, I noticed that your correspondence goes way back. You're a former Chief Justice, and letter from her when she was still in the legislature. Your correspondence goes back quite a while. Senator Murphy, is there a discussion from the committee? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I have, I guess, a lot of questions, and I'll try to be a little brief here. But just a couple of things that I've heard, and I want to clarify. We've heard testimony, first of all, to say that the use of marijuana in this bill, as it's discussed, as it's talked about, first of all, is not prescribed. And then we've heard, I think, Senator Murphy, you said that it was prescribed, but I think Mr. Levine said that there is no prescription that is being done by patients. I just want to make clear that this is, my understanding is that there's no prescription, that this is not a prescribed medication. And also, as the point was made by Mr. Backstrom, and that there is no effective way to control this. And I think, Mr. Chairman and members, that we are a health policy committee, and we're talking about how are we going to govern a drug. And I'd like to suggest if we have other pain medications available to people in the marketplace, would we say to the public it is appropriate for an individual to decide to what extent, to what level, and how often that drug would be used without the guidance of any medical professional as to its use? In other words, there's all kinds of pain medications that are available right now. They're controlled. We ask people to keep a strict accounting of how much of that is available, how it gets administered, who uses it. And I think that that's a pretty rational expectation when you're talking about dangerous drugs. In this case, we're saying that those things should not be considered. We're saying that patients on their own decision should decide how much, how often, to what quantity of this drug they ought to take. And I think as a health policy committee, we should say, why would we do this in the case of one pain administration only? Why not allow any pain medication to be administered in this way? Why would we say that in this one case, federal law, other forms of control and science that governs the use of drugs, we're going to respect it in all those other cases, but in this one case, we are not? I think that, to me, is the policy implication of what we're doing. I think one of the witnesses asked the question, are we not putting ourselves in the position of acting as the FDA? As far as I know, there are no members of this committee who are doctors or who are medical scientists. We've not heard any testimony. Is there a doctor here? Maybe there's
a doctor
Solon. Here.
No,
I'm not a Solon.
Mr. Chair?
And just let me finish, Mr. Chairman. We have not heard any testimony from medical researchers, from doctors, or anyone who's done testing on this drug. And we are about to take a policy position to say that this one drug should be administered by patients on their own decision to whatever quantity and whatever frequency they believe to be right, without the oversight, guidance, or counsel of a medical professional, without a prescription, without any liability accruing to anyone. And I just would ask Senator Murphy and Mr. Levine if that is a wise policy to say of all the drugs for pain that are available to people, that this one drug ought to be treated in such an exceptional way, in a way that we would not conceive of treating any other medicine for pain.
Mr. Chairman, simple answer is yes. Senator Hand, and I say yes as a person who in my younger day was an athlete, had an opportunity to get injured on the football field from time to time, and they always give you a bottle of pain pills, and it says take one every 2 to 4 hours. Think about that for a second. One every 2 to 4 hours. I could take one after hour two. It doesn't work. I'll take another one, and then find out that it doesn't work. Take a couple more. There's potentials for abuse any place you go, Senator Hand. And, it doesn't matter if it's a prescribed drug or one that is a recommended drug by the doctor. Besides that, once again, nobody last year that I'm aware of died from an overdose of marijuana. Nobody. But I think that if you talk to any doctor out there, they'll tell you that there are cases where people die from prescription drugs.
And
nobody died.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, I'm not aware of if there's anybody who's died from marijuana or not. I suspect that there have been people who have died, perhaps people who have been marijuana users who've become depressed, have taken their life, or have been involved in accidents. I'm not sure. I believe.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that is abuse. And now, Senator Hand, you're talking about something I know about, okay?
And there's a huge
difference between people who are trying to alleviate their pain and people who are going to abuse.
Mr. Chairman,
and it doesn't matter if it's marijuana, alcohol, Dexedrine, or any of these ones that Mr. Pritchard passed out, if you have the tendency to be an abuser, you will abuse.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Murphy, Senator Murphy, you were making the point that people abuse prescription drugs, and I agree. They do, and when they do, they may die. And my point is that people can abuse marijuana and possibly suffer ill effects as well. My only question, and going back to the major question, is why would we treat this one pain medication uniquely from all, if this is a good way to administer pain medication, why don't we say let's let all pain medications be available to be used by consumers at their own discretion? Why would we need to govern this at all?
Mr. Chair, briefly?
Very briefly, Mr. Green.
The answer is because marijuana being illegal is a political decision, not a medical one, and the DEA controls the scheduling of marijuana, and despite the recommendations of their administrative law judge, they will not reschedule it. They actively block research from going forward. There was just this court case, like I said, on Monday that came down that the DEA was blocking this research from going forward. So what happens is you have the states acting to protect their citizens from the threat of arrest for trying to alleviate their pain, and none of the 11 states that have passed this have restricted these laws in any way. In fact, any legislative action that's happened around any medical marijuana law anywhere has expanded the law for conditions, for plant limits, et cetera. So if there was, we heard a lot of testimony that the sky's going to fall, but Minnesota's not reinventing the wheel. And if the sky was falling in all these states, we would see them, the laws being repealed, we would not see them being popular at 70-80% margins. So we can speculate on the harms this may cause, or we can look at the actual models, the states, the laboratories of democracy, where this is happening, and for the most part, these laws are all working very well. And the FDA will not go forward, so it is a political decision. It forces the states to act.
Are there any amendments? Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, as a courtesy to Senator Murphy, I'd like to move that his bill, Senate File 345, be recommended to pass and be sent to wherever it's supposed to go next.
I'm going to be judiciary.
I only remember it has to go to about five committees. I think I'm not on any of the rest of them this year, so.
I think it's judiciary's next step.
But, Mr. Chair, could we send it to health budget just for fun, Senator Burke?
On the Berggren motion, is there any more, is there a debate? Are there any amendments? If not, on the Berggren motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee
members.
Thank you,
Senator Murphy. Senator Berggren, I would like to get through at least Senate File 555, which I think is a quick bill and is fairly time sensitive. So if you could start with that one and maybe we can get to one more. And as people are leaving the room, please try and be quiet until you get outside the doors because we do have to continue the meeting. Best amendments that I thought on that one.
So which one are we going to do? 555? Oh, essential community.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Senate File 555 is a bill that came to my attention actually after the session started. It's related to the essential community provider law, and we always have a few folks out there that have either created new medical businesses or, for one reason or another, haven't met the essential community provider criteria in the past or didn't know about the law, and so then they have to come in and get the legislature to approve their being able to go to the Commissioner of Health, where they then look at all the criteria and determine if they meet the criteria to be an essential community provider. So I was working on a couple of those bills this year that didn't pass last year, only to discover that the whole law is set to expire. And it's set to expire this month. And so that would mean all the folks that have essential community provider status would be losing it. And so that's really why this bill is here. It will allow the process to remain an open one then, so people could apply whenever they're forming a business that would meet the essential provider, community provider status, which essentially is that you're serving a very large number of public clients and or uninsured clients. And the original idea behind the essential community provider law was to make sure that these providers got to be in everybody's network. So if you're given this designation, what it means is all the health plans and all the various insurers have to contract with you so that the clients that they've been seeing maybe as uninsured, if they become a Medicaid client, could continue going to that same provider and be able to have that provider get reimbursement. So this bill would make it a continuous process then, and it raises the fee to $60. It has been at $46, and the department thinks it hasn't been raised for a while and so is requesting if we're updating the law to change it. I have with me Rhonda Degelow, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers, to say a brief word.
Thank you. And there's, I'm going to ask in the meantime, is there anybody who wanted to testify in opposition or concerns about this bill? Okay. Ms. Degelow, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rhonda Degelow. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. The association represents a group of clinics who've been designated as essential community providers, or ECPs, for a number of years. I'm here to support Senate File 555, which would extend the ECP program. I have packets of information for you about these clinics and the patients they serve, and I'd like to share a few highlights from that packet. Minnesota's 17 community health centers are medical homes for 180,000 patients. These health centers are located throughout the state, with 11 in the metro area and 6 in greater Minnesota. The patients served by these health centers are predominantly low income, 86% of them have incomes below 200% of federal poverty guidelines. 42% of them are uninsured for health care, and another 35% are covered by MA Minnesota Care and GAMC. Two-thirds of them are from culturally diverse backgrounds, including Latino, African American, Asian, and Native American. Minnesota's community health centers provide primary and preventive health care services, including medical, dental, and mental health. As you might expect, given the socioeconomic status and the cultural diversity of these patients, the incidence of chronic disease is much higher in this patient population. And so all of these health centers are actively engaged in programs to prevent and closely manage diabetes, cardiovascular disease, and depression. These health centers also provide services to make healthcare more accessible to people with special needs, such as language translation, transportation, and case management. All of them provide community outreach and health education services. As you know, the Essential Community Provider Program was enacted in 1994 as the state began to move the Medicaid program into managed care. Under PMAP, there was originally concern that these small safety net clinics might be left out of managed care networks. Over the years, the ECP program has worked well, both for the ECPs and for the health plans, and is still working well. The state's ECPs are uniquely qualified to care for a diverse population of patients with special health care needs and challenges, such as socioeconomic status, cultural background, or language needs. It is important that we preserve access for these patients and assure continuity of care by including these safety net clinics in managed care networks through the ECP program. As healthcare costs continue to rise and the numbers of uninsured continue to rise, we will no doubt see major changes to the healthcare delivery system and to government program policies over the next few years. While these larger system issues are being addressed, it is critical that we maintain continuity of services for our patients. Continuing the ECP program is an important piece of that effort. Thank you for your time and attention, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Daigle? Questions from members of the committee? If not, it's Senator Pretner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, I don't see any place on here that indicates that this is going to expire.
Isn't it the five-year language on the back that it just, the way it's done, after 5 years they expire?
I see.
No, five years has to do with the provider has to renew their application every 5 years to make sure that they still meet the criteria. But, and I don't know where it is, but some place in the law it is set to expire.
But don't we have to repeal it?
No. We don't. I mean,
it's Senator Dole, Senate Counsel says it works. The bill works, even though there's we're not repealing a repealer or whatever. Senator Dole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Berglund, I just for my information, I guess, why, if under the review, under what conditions would the designation be terminated? Is there any outstanding reasons for that would be terminated?
Well, Senator Dole, you have to be serving a disproportionate share of low-income uninsured people and or public patients. So, you know, if for some reason your population changed in your around your clinic, or you know your mission changed, or something like that, then you would then maybe no longer qualify for the status.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Further discussion. If not, Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 555 be recommended, pass, and referred to
floor.
Goes to the floor. On that motion, any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Berglund, do you want to move quickly on either the other bills relatively quick or witnesses that you wanted to have testify before?
Well, I think the food bill probably be the shorter one.
Okay. So we will Senate File 461.
Right. I have an amendment for this bill, and just so... folks that are saying, no, we have another one that's not ready today. It's more technical in nature.
The A2 amendment is the one we're handing out right now?
Well, I need the copy of it.
Okay,
then,
we'll get
all I have is the A1.
Okay, why don't you explain the bill and as it's going to be amended with your amendment? Okay.
The bill deals with food stamps and trying to make sure that people in our state are taking more advantage of the food stamp program. We've seen the usage of our food shelves shoot through the roof, and at the same time, we've seen the use of food stamps decline in Minnesota. And so this bill is especially designed at trying to make it easier for elders who are eligible for the food stamp program to be enrolled and stay enrolled in the program. And it does that in several ways. One, it does not cancel their eligibility for food stamps unless they haven't used the program for 12 months. Some seniors save up their food stamps so that they can have a family meal for a birthday or something. And so they might not be using it every month. And then also to create a more simplified application form that would be designed just for persons over 60, because they don't need to answer all of the questions that otherwise are on the food stamp application. And the length of the form can sometimes be a deterrent for elders to apply for the program. I do have one witness I'd like to call on quickly, Mr. Chairman, and that's Jessica Webster from the legal.
Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee. Yes. And Senator Berglund, the A2 is the amendment you want?
Yes.
Is that the only amendment then?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any discussion on the A2 amendment? Senator Berglund moves the A2 amendment. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Ms. Webster, welcome to the committee.
Chairman Marty, members, my name is Jessica Webster. I'm with Legal Aid, and I'll try to give the 1 minute nutshell of my testimony. Legal Aid will be releasing a report next week that shows that only 60% of eligible Minnesotans are using the federally funded food support program. And as Senator Berglund mentioned, we have hundreds of thousands of families visiting food shelves every year. We are losing hundreds of millions of dollars in federal food funds. And so we're just looking for ways to enroll more participants and make sure that people stay in the program.
Thank you. Questions from
Ms.
Webster?
Good job.
Senator Worgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to belabor this, Senator Berglund. I just want to understand. So right now, if someone doesn't use their food stamps for 90 days, the food stamps disappear entirely and they're unenrolled? Or do
yes.
they... They're automatically unenrolled. It's not just that issue goes away?
Actually, no. I'm sorry, Chairman Marty, Senator Worgan. The food stamp, what happens after 3 months of non-use is they're actually frozen. So they're stored offline. They're not canceled. But what happens is when someone possibly goes to the store in that fourth month, they might think they have $40 because they might have a $10 a month benefit, but they actually only have $10. So then they have to work with the county to get those benefits back online.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins.
If members didn't look in the packet that was just passed out, I would suggest that you do, because in here is the application for food stamps, 22 pages long. And so far I have found three places where you have to list all the people who live in your family. And then every month you have to fill out a four-page form, and I believe that would now go to every 6 months, according to the bill that's before us today.
Chairman Marty, I don't want to be, and Senator Higgins, I don't want to be disingenuous about the application. We do have a combined application form, so it's for cash assistance as well and for other public benefits. However, we do feel that we could move to a simplified application as 12 other states have.
I think that'd be
further
a grand
discussion
idea.
From the committee. If not, Senator Berglund moves Senate File 461 as amended. You recommend it pass. Does this go to finance?
Yes.
And referred to Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion on that motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Berglund, we were being told that your previous bill may need to go to finance because we're changing the fee.
I did just talk with our finance staff about that. I think it can be tracked without having the bill have to go to finance because
they can call it in if they need it. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Worthen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Berglund, just a comment. Seeing this 22-page form, I'm still looking forward to seeing your simplified applications. I'm right there.
I want it to happen, too, so thank you for your support on it.
Being no further business, the committee is adjourned.